want to talk to you about this subject of the right attitude about work. Do you remember a few years ago the humorous commercials that they had about this time of year, Fox Sports did, where the guy had a brand new nail gun and it wouldn't work? And I went and watched these again to refresh my memory. And then he actually looks at it and pulls the trigger. And I thought, well, that's not what you're supposed to do. He sets it down and it starts shooting nails all over the garage. And his wife comes out the door and he's crawling on the floor and he's like, get down. And a neighbor going by with one of the kids, it's shooting out into the driveway. And the message behind that was, don't buy anything made in October. And that was because the guy on the assembly line making the nail gun was watching the baseball playoffs. And so here goes the nail gun, and he's doing what he's supposed to be doing, and he completely misses the parts that he's supposed to be putting together. Very humorous. They had another one where a guy was in the store testing out a leaf blower, and he was going to try it out, and the trigger, it stuck. And the next thing you know, it comes off, and the next thing you know, it's shooting flames, and he's burning up the whole store. And then it says, don't buy anything made in October, and it switches to the guy who's supposed to be putting the leaf blower together, and he's watching the baseball playoffs. Here's a couple of pictures of what I'm talking about. Listen to some statistics in why we would want to talk about the right attitude about working. In Forbes magazine, there was some statistics that were found. With the internet in offices and now text messaging, the loss of time has become a real problem in the workforce. One statistics that I saw, and I think this was from actually a few years ago, and the point at that time, and these statistics had come in Forbes magazine from salary.com, and they had interviewed 750 employees. The point that they were making that 69% of the people admitted to doing personal related things on the clock, and that was up to 89% at that time. Now, here's what the finding was when it came to the statistics, and I have no idea. If you know anything about statistics, there's some error, like 3% built in on each side. But just look at some of these and why it would be important for us as Christians to have a good understanding about our attitudes about work. 31% wasted roughly 30 minutes a day. 31 waste roughly 1 hour a day. 16 waste roughly 2 hours a day. 6% waste roughly 3 hours a day. 2% waste roughly 4 hours a day, and 2% even waste 5% or more hours a day. 5 times 5, 25 hours out of a 40-hour work week, let's say. That's troubling, and that's a problem. And then if you actually translate that into dollars, then, and now another statistic, that's an average of 5 hours a week on the cell phone. They found 5 hours a week on the cell phone doing things not related to one's work. Now look at this. At a cost of $15.5 billion in wasted time, that's $1.5 billion according to the New York Post. Now we wouldn't want to take the New York Post word on a lot of stuff, but put that in half. Even if half of that is true, that's astounding. That's actually greater than the amount of that companies are having to build into our product price for the cost of lost goods, theft, which I think is like 3% if what I saw is right. Now, we all understand that that gets passed on to the consumer. That's why you pay maybe some more than what you want to pay for a product, because a company can't eat that kind of lost time, nor product stolen. So we have to get a good understanding here of what, the statistic is, this is 3 times more than the recognized business crimes. Now, as a side for parents, just a side note, If you need to teach your children anything, you need to teach them how to work and how to do it properly. And like I tried to instruct my own children, you will stick out like a sore thumb in this economy, in this day and time in America, because of this type of problem. And so there's a side lesson for parents and things that we need to teach our children. And that is, and Bailey, when she actually went over to work over here at the gift shop, David Christopher's, they were expected to put their cell phones aside. And there are times at Chick-fil-A that they have to remind Kara and all of those that work there that they need to put those away and not be on their phones. It just depends on what kind of problems they might be seeing. So it begs the question, what should our attitude be about work as a Christian? Well, the Lord has a lot to say about this, as we're going to find. The Bible has a lot to say about those who do not work, those that are lazy. We actually touched on some of these when we were looking at some of the Proverbs a few weeks ago, but there's so many that I thought it would be good that we look at this. Look at our scripture reading in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, which Tommy has already read for us, but let me just highlight some of the things that are said in this text. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. And if you understand what was read, there apparently is a problem at Thessalonica with those who would not work. And the Bible is very clear in verse 10. For let me get in the right place. Even so, verse 10, when we were with you, Paul says, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. The Bible's pretty clear about this. The choice really is to feast or to famine. And you think about what that would do for a person's motivation. Because if you're hungry, then you just might get to work. And so the Bible is very clear on this matter. It's a choice of feasting or famine. And the answer to that is settled on whether or not you're going to work or not. And that's pretty simple and that's pretty direct. But you know, the U.S. government has made a mess of all of these things because of that principle being violated. Now, it may not have started out that way, but people who can work but won't work are now being fed by those who do work, and that's causing a problem and a burden, really, across the board. And that in reality, we're not talking about someone that is physically unable. But I sure see a lot of people pulling up without a handicap sticker in the window that when they find it convenient to park, that's when they decide to throw it up in there and park in that. And then they get out and you wonder, well, what's that all about? And we all know that it is, what we're dealing with is dealing with all kinds of corruption and laziness. And that's what we want to make sure that we're not a part of. Now, again, to understand that there are times, of course, when that may not be the case. And as I said, it may have started out that way, but it has grown into quite a problem. But our question is, all that aside, what is it that a Christian, how is it a Christian should view, what is their attitude about work? What is their attitude and how it has to reflect what's been revealed in the Scriptures? And that we cannot be guilty of acting like the world. Even in this particular subject or discussion, we cannot find ourselves being prone to doing the way the rest of the world is. We can't get into this mindset of, well, everybody takes a few things from the office. No, that's theft. Or, you know, everybody's doing it. Everybody's on their phone. Everybody's doing this. Well, that's never the answer to the questions that we raise as God's people. It's what does God require of us? What does God want us to do when we are laboring? So what is our right attitude? Well, let's look at some things that were said in the beginning. Look at Genesis chapter 2 and verse 15. So God has placed Adam and Eve in the garden. And it's a beautiful garden. It's a beautiful place. But even then, God gave instruction in verse 15 of chapter 2. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend it and to keep it. So Adam was supposed to dress the garden. And that means that he is to care for it, tend to it. He's to work it. It is to, in this idea of to till it. And Adam was to do that within the Garden of Eden that God had created. He was to protect it, which is something that you would need to do in the idea of tending to it. And so there was a lot of work that would need to be done. And anybody that's, you know, planted a garden, and I'm pretty disastrous at it myself, but if you've ever worked the land, if you've ever done any type of farming, and I certainly as a child, we had a rather large garden. There was times that my father would even plant maybe some field corn over in another field, a neighbor's field type of thing. But there's a lot of physical labor that's involved. And I remember even as kids when we planted one of those fields, Dad had us going down the row dropping seeds every so far apart. You know, there wasn't a seed. We didn't have a seeder. We were actually physically dropping them in, you know, every so far. Like you can just picture these little crim boys walking down the aisles doing this, sticking the little seed down in. And then Dad would come along and then cover that over. But, you know, there's a lot of work involved in that. And so it was with Adam. But now, if you look at Genesis chapter 3, and you turn over there, and now Adam and Eve have sinned, and God is pronouncing these curses, and look at what is said with regards to the land and for the work that Adam would do. It says there in verse 19, "And in the sweat of your face you shall eat bread, till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and from dust you shall return." And so it would seem that there was a difference here in the way that he cared for the garden versus now he's got to deal with all of the things, the thorns, the thistles, the weeds, and all of the various things that he's really going to have to sweat. And that was actually a curse. So God cursed man because of sin, to where now he would actually have to sweat. And Chad, you certainly do a lot of that in the type of work that you do, and especially during those hot months. I suspect you're one of the ones that's glad it's cooled off a little bit. You know, and to sweat, and we know that physical labor. It's been noted, God gives the birds their food, but he doesn't throw it into their nests. And I thought that was a pretty good quote too. That they still, if you watch the birds, they've got to go gather those worms. And though God feeds them and feeds them quite well and knows every one of them, as we learn in Scripture, he doesn't just throw it into the nest. And so it is. So what is our attitude now as we begin to talk about attitude? Well, look at Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 10. Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and in verse 10. And we start looking at how does God want us to approach labor. It's really the old whistle while you work. You know, that's borrowed, really. Look at Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 10. "Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you're going." So whatever you do, he says, you just give it all your might. Just, you know, give your strength, give your best efforts. Whatever you choose to do, basically what we're saying is do your best. Now there again, that's something that has to be taught. And that's something that we would want to teach our children when we're talking about this day and time where it seems like those types of things are of no value today. But yet when it comes to the Scriptures, we need to teach our children. And trust me, I've dealt with this as a father, as my children have worked and they've come home. And they've got stories, and they've got complaints, and they've got grumbles, and you just say, be thankful that they hired you and that you have a job. And do the best that you can. Are you doing the best that you can? And try to encourage them to have a good attitude about the things that they are doing. To get them to equate that you're asked to stay a little longer, and for them to realize that's a good thing, because that puts more in the bank account. That's not a bad thing. And by the way, you missed this day because you took off, so you're making up a day here. That's not a bad thing. You know, to do your best, to do your best. And one significant way that we often overlook in our service to God, think about this, is how we approach the everyday task. We often forget that our attitude, the way that we go to work, the way that we approach work. And so we're talking about something that's very serious. If you look at Colossians chapter 3, we'll begin in verse 22. Colossians 3 and verse 22. You'll see that there's some seriousness about this, because if you look at verse 22, bondservants, obey in all things your master according to the flesh, not with eye service or as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men. You see, there's always a greater purpose behind things. And if we approach our work with these thoughts in mind, he's actually writing to people who are slaves. I mean, they were in a master-slave relationship. This wasn't something that they could walk away from. This is like Onesimus and Philemon and the relationship that was there, that even though Onesimus had become a Christian, Paul is encouraging Philemon to have him back, and that Onesimus still needed to come back because there was a master-slave relationship and not something you could just walk away from. And he says in verse 22, obey them. And then he says, why? Fearing God. So are we talking about something that's serious about our attitude? And then he says, whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord. And so know that behind this, you're actually representing and serving the Lord. And do we think about that? We around the table, and rightfully so, often talk about how the Lord blesses us. Sometimes the men will say we are thankful that we have the jobs that we have to be able to give back to the Lord the things that he's blessed us with. You see, if we look at things from that perspective and we think about, well, I'm doing this heartily unto the Lord. I've mentioned Brother J.D. Evans before, the member of the church down in Tampa, that all day, every day, you could just hear him whistling tunes. I got to see him the other day. I'm not sure. I think he's getting close to 90. And it was good to see him. I got to step over and speak to him. He was with his family. But such a good example for me about, you know, and you talk about doing the best. I mean, the things that he touched, he was the landscaper. He was the one that mowed the yards. And if it was going to be done, it was going to be done right. And I'm talking about meticulous. He kept that equipment running when nobody else would have kept that equipment running. I think it was because he had a different spirit and attitude about what he was doing and what he was accomplishing. The man served as an elder in the Lord's church, I think, for many, many years. You can only imagine why. I may be wrong about that, but I think that's correct. We often overlook God and our service unto him. Look at Romans chapter 12 and in verse 11. Look at verse 9. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be kindly affectioned to one another with brotherly love and honor, preferring one and giving preference to one another. Look at this. Not lagging in diligence. And diligence is putting forth a steady and best effort in the things that we do. There's an example here. Look at Jeroboam. Jeroboam in 1 Kings 11. The kids and I back in the high school class, we just talked about King Jeroboam. King Jeroboam is the one who became the king of the 10 tribes when the nation divided. He's the one that the Bible then says that they continued in the sins of Jeroboam because he's the one that set up the golden calves in Dan and Bethel, because he was afraid the people would go down to Jerusalem and then they would turn from him and he would lose the northern tribes. But before all of that, look at 1 Kings in chapter 11 and look at verse 28. The man Jeroboam was a mighty man of valor, and Solomon, seeing that the young man was lazy. That's not what that says. He was industrious. He was industrious. Made him the officer over all the labor force of the house of Joseph. Why? Because he was industrious. In other words, he wasn't lazy. He was someone that was busy. He was getting things done. And that's the type of attitude that we should have. So was the virtuous woman in Proverbs chapter 31, if you'll turn over there. Proverbs chapter 31. That's something that is very easily seen in the writing here of the woman who is identified as being very virtuous. Look at verse 27. She watches over the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. She's busy. She's busy. When I think of someone like that, I think of my grandmother. My grandmother, you know, in that older generation, was up early, always doing something, always stitching something. If she was watching Wheel of Fortune, she was still hand-stitching something. She was still making something for a grandkid. She was writing a card. I mean, it was just a constant thing of busyness in her life. I think it helped her in many, many ways. But look at how many passages there are that deal with this. In Proverbs 14:23, in all labor there is profit, but idle chatter leads only to poverty. Look at Proverbs 22 and verse 29. He says, do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. He will not stand before unknown men. That is so true. If I could tell the young people anything, is what I said a moment ago. If you give your best and you do a good job, you're going to just, you'll be rewarded. I've had people who own businesses who know this very well. And they'll reward that kind of work. They'll reward that kind of work really quick. You won't have problems getting pay increases because they will recognize just how different and how much you stand apart from others. And this passage bears that out. Do you see a man who excels in his work? Well, where's he going to stand? Well, the idea is climbing the ladder here is really the picture. Look at Proverbs 27 and verse 23. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks and attend to your herds. What's that saying? Don't be a lazy shepherd. I mean, that's an analogy of a shepherd. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks. Well, you know, Jesus talks about the good shepherd in John chapter 10. And what set him apart was he did exactly that. He knows the state of his flocks. And he attends to them. Versus what does he talk about? The hireling? They're not mine. Here comes the wolf. I'm out of here. So think about this when it comes to our work. Well, it's not my business. You know, what do I care? And so again, to stress the idea, especially to the young, that no, that's not your business, but you won't have that job if that business doesn't exist. And that depends greatly on the type of people that work in that business. And we all know of businesses that suffer. And what happens is they get in a downward trend and it gets hard to hire good people. And they get known for just hiring and having great turnover, because nobody will stay. And you know what? It's some of the places that we won't go. Probably in your mind you're thinking of, yeah, I don't go to that business. I won't eat there for that very reason. Because I know if I go, I'm not going to get any service and the people don't care if we're there. So what do? You avoid those kinds of places. Be diligent to know the state of your flocks, to attend to your herds. Again, this idea of being good at what you do. Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful? Okay, I'm a Christian, but I used to be a thief. He says, don't do that anymore. Well, you got to fill that void with something. He says, you need to work. Why do you work? So you can give to others that have need. Do you ever think about that's why you work? Have you ever thought that that extra time would be something you could use of value to help somebody else? Some of you may have opportunity for overtime. Have you ever thought, I'm going to work this day so I can do this? We often don't think that way. It's, what am I going to be able to buy? What am I going to be able to get? You know, what else can I save and what else can I have? That goes back to, we've been talking already in the past couple of weeks, we were talking about that selfishness and spending and stuff. Look at Proverbs 20 and verse 13. Do not love sleep lest you come to poverty. Open your eyes and you will be satisfied with bread. Well, that's just dealing with the reality of if you won't work, You won't wake up and smell and see any bread. I like this quote. I like work. It fascinates me. I can sit and look at it for hours. You ever know anybody like that? They say there's three types of workers. There's the one, take a moving a piano. If you've ever had to do that, that's quite a task. The first kind gets in behind and pushes. The second pulls and guides. The third grabs the piano stool. Right? You know anybody like that? I'm telling you, to have a different spirit and a different attitude goes a long way. And we're talking about scriptural principles here. Laziness is condemned in Proverbs 10, verse 4 and 5. He who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a wise son. He who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame. Look at Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 11. He who tills his land will be satisfied with bread, but he who follows frivolity is devoid of understanding. Well, it's the old, help me make the bread, right? What's the little hen, is that the old, what is that, that's right, yeah. Help me make the bread. Used to see that all the times on the kids' show. And no, I won't. But then when it came time to the bread, they were all showing up to eat. Till the land, be satisfied. But if you do this, you'll be devoid of understanding. The soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich. See, again, there's our word, diligence, effort, heartily, with diligence. The attitude of doing things and getting after things. Look at Proverbs 18 and verse 9. He who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer. Well, you don't want to have that kind of a company, do you? Well, he says the lazy man is that way. Somebody that's slothful in his work. And we started off talking about how we can be slothful. And we don't want to deal with that, but that's the reality. It's just too easy to get sidetracked with all of these things. And trust me, this is something that I have to deal with. I have to challenge myself with, because I don't have anybody standing over me and my labors. So it's something that we have to be mindful of. Proverbs 19 and verse 15, laziness casts one into a deep sleep, and an idle person will suffer hunger. That's exactly what Paul was telling the church at Thessalonica. If you won't work and you don't eat, you're going to get out there and do something, because the stomach is going to force you to do something. You know, I've heard of those that hold the signs out here. I'm hungry. I'll go to work. I've known people that said, come here, I'll do something. Come, I got some things for you. They won't take them up on it. Won't take them up on it. They'll have every kind of excuse as to why they don't. You know why? Because they're making a lot of good money just standing there. And if you've seen how this works when it's done with ill intent and wrong, there's usually somebody over in the bush that they're swapping in and out, because standing that long's too hard to do that even. So they take turns, they take times moving in and out to gather funds. I used to watch men when I was working for Keebler at the grocery stores. I watched one guy, he was very clever. He'd go over to one side of the parking lot and ask for just a nickel, just a nickel. I'm only asking for a nickel, Tommy. Can I have a nickel? He'd do that. He'd walk around the store, he'd come to the other side, and he'd ask that person for a nickel. You know, by the end of the day, he'd had his $1.50 where he could get drunk all day on his big bottle of Milwaukee beer. Whatever it took to get whatever he needed to get drunk that night. He's only asking for a nickel. He'd do all that work. A lazy man buries his hands in the bowl and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. So lazy that you got to, the picture is you got to get a spoon and feed him, because he can't even lift up his own hand to feed himself. Proverbs 20 verse 4, the lazy man will not plow because of winter. He will beg during harvest and have nothing. I told you the Bible has a lot to say. Proverbs 24 verse 30 to 34, I went by the field of the lazy man and by the vineyard of the man devoid of understanding. And there it was. Do you see how he keeps equating a lazy man with somebody who doesn't have any kind of understanding about the reality of things? And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. I went by his field. Its surface was covered with nettles. Its stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well. I looked on it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. So shall your poverty come like a prowler, and your need like an armed man. Ezekiel 16 and verse 49 says, look, this was the iniquity of your sister Sodom. What was one of the problems of Sodom? You know, we often say, well, the homosexuality was a problem. She and her daughter had pride, fullness of food, and abundance of what? Idleness. Neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and the needy. Oh, there was a lot going on in that city. It wasn't just this one thing. Sodom, God destroyed Sodom because there was a lot of wickedness and problems in Sodom. And one of them was idleness, and which is another way of saying they just didn't do anything. In 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8, but if anyone does not provide for his own and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Is that pretty straightforward about the way God looks at a man who will not provide for his family? Pretty straightforward. Well, where can the lazy man go to learn behavior differently? Look at Proverbs 6. He says, go to the ant, you sluggard. Proverbs chapter 6. And we learned some things. And here's another good point for us to learn as those that labor, and for the young to recognize also, and that is nobody has to be standing over top of you and watching because you're doing what you're supposed to do. Proverbs chapter 6 and verse 6. Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. Verse 9. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? Oops. Let me get in the right place. I'm going to jump chapters here. Go to the ant, you sluggard, verse 6, consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer, gathers her food in the harvest. Oh, how long you slumber, O sluggard, will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall poverty come on you like a prowler, and you need and your need like an armed man. And that we had already read the end of that. But if you look what he says there, he says they don't have a supervisor standing over them. And have you ever known that? You know how much time is wasted? Bob, you're going to have to go, I'm sorry, bad illustration. Doug, you're going to have to go over here and just stand right over that guy or he won't do his job. Well, then that's wasting Doug's time, right? And so, again, we can see what, you know, go to the ant. The ant doesn't have to have a supervisor over him, an overseer, a ruler. Yeah, they get to work. They gather the food. They do the things that they need to do. And so should it be our attitude of a Christian. Have you ever watched ants? Do you ever see them standing still? They are always moving, right? Constantly scurrying about. You just don't see one. Just if they're sitting there, they're usually trying to figure out how to grab the food and go, right? Or maybe they're doing a little bit of eating, and you can see that. But if that, boy, they're just buzzing all over the place. And that should be our attitude as a Christian when it comes to laboring and work. Work has its proper place. Two other passages, Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 10 and 11. Whatever your eye desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labors, and this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for wind. There was no profit under the sun. Work has its proper place. Look at verse 16. For there is no remembrance of the wise than for the fool forever, since all that now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? As a fool. Therefore I hated life because of the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for all is vanity and grasping of the wind. Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. All right, so as we look at those last two passages, we kind of scratch our head. We all have to recognize that while we must eat and work, and we must, it all has its proper place. Sometimes we forget why we labor. If you go back to a man who won't provide for his family, he's worse than an unbeliever. Well, we often forget that what we're trying to do is provide the necessary things for the family. And we are to eat and rejoice, and that is our reward from our labors. I don't think anybody here works and labors without receiving a paycheck. There's that benefit, and we are to recognize it and rejoice in it. We're supposed to be thankful for our blessings and the daily provisions that we have. But it also teaches us that when we die, somebody else takes our job. And that's just a fact. Or if we've been a farmer, somebody else gets the farm. It's just a fact. And there's been all of that labor, but it's left behind. And so what that's telling us is spiritual things are much more important. So if we equate that with the realities of work, then we have a different attitude and spirit about all this, right? We're going to do the best we can. We're going to be happy because of our blessings from God. We're going to rejoice in them. We're going to share them. We've got a different spirit than so much of the world. I hope that's been helpful in some small way. With all that in mind, we want to extend an invitation of Christ to come and be healed from the wages of sin. If you want to know what kind of payment you get from sin, the wages of sin is death, spiritual death, separation from God. You can do something about that this morning. You can come confessing Jesus Christ as your Savior. You can come turning from your sins. You can be baptized to wash your sins away. Be faithful until death, and God will give you a crown of life. There are far greater things that await us. If you're a child of God and things are amiss and wrong, and maybe there's concern or things that need to be prayed for on your behalf, we stand ready to help you in any way as together we all stand and sing.